my introduction may be, maybe, may not flow too smoothly because I'm always a very complex poet. And I think that most of you are aware of who he is, but there may be a few who are not, and so I'll very briefly say a few things about his past achievements, and then go on to a few remarks about how I see his, those of his poems, which I've been reading and rereading over the past several weeks, and his poetics. Michael McClure is one of the original beat poets, and I've never understood, I didn't understand at the time why he was grouped in that, why he was included in that group or under that rubric. I don't know who it was that first invented the word beat, but whoever it was, I assume that he had in mind Gertrude Stein's lines or Hemingway, "You are all a lost generation." So it's a past participle, so it's a kind of a downbeat term, and I never thought of Michael McClure as a downbeat poet. I think of him more as a visionary, which is not to imply that some of the other beats are also visionary. We're also visionaries. He's written some 14 books of poetry, plays, collections of essays. He is throughout his poetic life has been involved with music, with poetry and jazz, famously as a mentor to Jim Morrison and as a co-author of a song with Janis Joplin. Michael McClure is a lyric poet and a philosophical poet. Ezra Pound at one time, when he was musing upon the future of poetry, suggested there might be three types of poetries, phonopaic, meaning poetry of images, melopaic, meaning poetry of musicality, and logopaic, meaning poetry of ideas. I think that Michael McClure has been adept at all three of those types of poetries, and quite often all, sometimes all three on the same page. See, he is mellow poetic doubly, and so many of his poems are organized like musical scores, and also in that the language of his poetry has a kind of a musicality. I just want to read a very brief passage from a poem called Ode for Soft Voice. "The nerves are dead that feel no hunger or pain, there's no triumph but failure. This is the last speech of seraphim or beast sick in need for change and chaos. The room of banished love for beauty, the tooth in our breast. What we see is real and able to our hand, but we feel is beauty. Beauty, what we strike is hatred, what we scent is odorous. This about me is my bride, if I kick aside the forms of it, for woman, world, and mineral, for air, for earth, for fire, and water, for table, chair, and blood." That has, to me, musicality. But as a poet of ideas, I first want to make a point which Stan Brakhage made, in that Michael McClure's use and command of ideas is quite different from what we would find from almost any other writer. To quote Stan Brakhage, Michael McClure expresses the whole body's thought as distinct from simply and only brain think. The other qualification, and it's really related as well to that emphasis on the body rather than simply the brain, is Michael's reaction to a poet who was certainly one of his mentors, Charles Olson. And Michael McClure disagreed with Olson's emphasis upon culture. And this is a quote from Michael McClure. "I believe that the spring of poetry must be more physical, more genetic, more based in flesh, and have less relationship to culture." In a poem in 1978 called Antechamber, and I want to read just a couple of lines from that. Which I think are very significant. "Do you know we crowded on the land? Do you know we crowded on the land? The black shapes in pansies are imitating flocks of nectar-drinking flies. Around the complex brilliance of our feedback, and we broke the substrate and made the shattered substrate and made the substrate shattered. The forests and the chaparral are burned and grazed and fenced in imitation of ourselves." I read there a kind of a suggestion of a primal fault line in our being that goes way back before culture, and that exhibits, if that's the right word, a biological basis for thought. And when I say way back, Michael McClure in that very poem goes back so far that he states this somewhat comic line, but serial comic, "I am a mammal patriot." Speaking for that entire class of beings, and then acknowledging that this class has relations. This is this poem called An Antechamber, which I read as a poetics. The gnats at sundown, in the rosy, lovely light, are cousin angels catching light upon their wings in the antechamber of the night. I see in that poem that the antechamber is where we are. I think it's very important in reading Michael McClure's poem to see that his cosmic, that word cosmic has, I haven't been able to think it till this minute, but now soon his cosmic vision, I think it's important that it is not a split vision. It is not the kind of vision you encounter in a writer like Teilhard de Chardin, who has the idea that there is some aspect of our human thought that rises to a sphere beyond the shit and muck of the world, a vision that is, say, opposed to entropy. This is not true of Michael McClure's vision. As I read it, Michael McClure takes it all on. He takes on even human destructiveness. He takes on human destructiveness as well as beauty. This is particularly true in his new work, Mysteriosos, and in a great new poem called Dear Being, which is a poem of old age and childhood, or perhaps of childhood in old age. And it calls to my mind a couplet of William Blake: "The child's toys and the old man's reasons are the fruits of the two seasons." Mm. And also, it's such a great poem, it also calls to my mind William Carlos Williams' poem that begins, "The descent beckons, even as the ascent beckoned. Memory is a kind of accomplishment." So let me just conclude here with a line from Michael McClure, and this is the last line in the author's note to his selected poems. "I continue to see the poem as an extension of myself, as a gesture, and as an organism seeking life. Michael McClure.
Hey, can you hear at the back all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I want to thank so many people have been involved in getting me here. I just want to thank them all. Special thanks to George, from another viewpoint, for that introduction. Say one thing about why I'm included in the Beats, though, George. I'm included in the Beats because I was very close to Robert Duncan, and we read a poem of Robert. We performed a play of Robert Duncan's at the... at the Sixth Gallery in San Francisco. And then I think as a result of that, the Sixth Gallery, which was a group of radical young painters coming out of Clifford Still and Mark Rothko, Wally Hendrick asked me if I could arrange a poetry reading for the Sixth Gallery, which was a good deal. One of the six people at the Sixth Gallery was Jack Spicer. Spicer was gone, he was in Boston, and so they asked me to arrange the reading because they'd seen me reading in Robert's play, and I said, yeah. And I ran into Allen Ginsberg a few days later, and he said, what are you doing? Am I too loud now? Okay. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm arranging a poetry reading at the Sixth Gallery. And he said, how are you doing? And not at all, I don't have time. He said, shall I do it? I said, absolutely, go ahead, Allen. And I showed up at the Sixth Gallery, and there was Alan, who I knew. Kenneth Rexroth was our master of ceremonies, one of the instigators of this event. And Alan was there, and Phil Blamontio was there, who was another friend of mine. I'd only been in San Francisco about, less than a year. And I was 22 years old. And... we gave a poetry reading, and Allen Ginsberg wrote a poem called Howl. And I wrote a poem, and Lamantia wrote a poem, and Jack Kerouac stumbled around the audience shouting, go, go, go. And Lawrence Ferlinghetti decided to make a book out of Howl, and a lot of people got turned on. And then after that, that poetry reading is often given the title of deserving or not of being the first poetry reading of the Beat Generation. I guess it probably was. And so I automatically became a member of the Beats. And of course I'm very close to them. My closest friends were Alan and Kerouac, but also I was very, very close to Robert Duncan and to people like that too, to Wallace Berman. And so you're right. What am I doing there? Well, that's what I'm doing there. Anyway, just to explain it. So, this book of mine just came out. I'm thrilled about it because I didn't edit it. The trick to getting a great book is having somebody else edit it. Because if you edit it, you put in yourself over and over and over all the important poems of yours, all the overstuffed poems of yours, all the great dinosaur tales of yours. You're sick of dragging around, get stuffed in there. Not when Leslie edits it for you. It was edited by Leslie Scalapino, who not only is a dear friend of mine, but she's a language poet. Talk about somebody who's not very close to the Beats. That would be Leslie. But very close to my work, as I'm very close to hers. So she put this together. I'm thrilled with it. So, title for the Of Indigo and Saffron, Selected and New Poems. And the dedication is for the protection of all beings. In 1961, Lawrence Ferlinghetti and I edited a magazine, which some of you have seen, called The Journal for the Protection of All Beings. And it's been a kind of motto of mine ever since. Preface. Says, I want these poems to be soft and vigorous as the breath of a sparrow on the redwood deck rail, and as tumultuous as a lion purring in the rain by the roadside in Kenya. These poems are from what love I have invented, what soul I have made, and the anger that has grown inside me at the biocidal war. I breathe the inspiration of countless many. I tell you, 1955, it was amazing to wander around California, around coastal California, mid-coast, around Big Sur, Carmel, and look out there and see. I'd read in the papers or somewhere that the sea otters had come back, but to stand on the deck rail on a cliff edge overlooking the ocean in Carmel, and I'm a few miles south of Carmel in Big Sur, in the place where Henry Miller went for his steam baths. This is where Esalen was later when they turned it into a business. This was just old, worn-out water tubs hanging out the side of a cliff with a little roof over it. And Henry Miller sitting there, and Ephraim Doner, the painter, sitting there, and Minor White sitting there, and whoever was living around there, coming down to bathe themselves in this water, coming out of cracks in the cliff. And I looked at that sea. My God, I am looking. I'd only been in California a few months. I'm looking at sea otters. Whoa! The mystery of the hunt. It's the mystery of the hunt that intrigues me, that drives us like lemmings, but cautiously. The search for a bright square cloud, the scent of lemon verbena, or to learn rules for the game the sea otters play in the surf. It is these small things and the secret behind them that fill the heart, the pattern, the spirit, the fiery demon that link them together and pull their freedom into our senses. The smell of a shrub, a cloud, the action of animals, the rising, the exuberance when the mystery is unveiled. It is these small things that, when brought into vision, become an inferno. O giddy blank white page, O dreamy man, O interred spirit, bulk in meat and hand, O both are one, O love, black, white, and rose, dream rose, and purple and green, and scratched, O sleeping lion man, O beast, O black odom, O depth within, O limited void as far as eyes can see and nose can smell, O dreamer. O bride, God, shit, and aching stretch rib, no, not lion, not the shit of metaphor, the deep and singing beast, void instead, O crap upon the page. I dream and walk in my dream, with proud stride, I am clean, and dream with brown eye, I am free of liberty. The body, the spirit are one, I am energy. Am muscled space, am meat, and colored light, romantic cry. Amy was sitting in the Sylvia Hotel today. We're staying, and a seagull came up to the window. I was standing there watching her and said, look at that. And they looked at each other for a while. Siegel, she'd move, Siegel would turn and said, I once saw somebody walking along in a eucalyptus forest, and they were holding in their hands some flowers. And as they walked along, a hummingbird was flying behind them, drinking out of the flower. It's just, it is an amazing world, isn't it? Or perfectly ordinary. That's pretty ordinary. But to find a dead hummingbird ode. The far darter is dead in my hand, the beautiful, shabby colors. And the damp spots where the eyes were, small form that was all spirit, smashed on the plate, glass window, the green head and ruby ruffles, the beautiful, shabby colors, and the damp spots where the eyes were. All head and chest and the eros spear of the beak moving like Cupid in the fuchsias, hummingbird. Spike of desire. The huge chest and the beautiful shabby colors. Tiny legs thrust back in the last stiff agony. What's on your side of the veil? Do you dip your beak in the vast black lily of space? Does the sweetness of the pain go on forever? Is there courage in the night? Where are the loves that make the blossom? Your body. Do they still spin in the air? Your wives and loves? Are you now more than meat? Finally, a star? Well, I had a knowledge came to me that I was going to write 99 poems in praise of the goddess. At that time I was practicing Kundalini Yoga, something that I discovered later nobody of my age should conceivably be doing, or maybe at any age. Here's one of the 99 poems. This one is more in English than most of them are, because most of them are mostly in what I call beast language. This one is pretty well mixed. It was written on August 6, 1962. Marilyn Monroe, today thou hast passed the dark barrier, diving in a swirl of golden hair. I hope you have entered a sacred paradise for full, warm bodies, full lips, full hips, and laughing eyes. Ah, roar, no lot. Oh, farewell, perfect mammal. Fare thee well from thy silken couch and dark day. Ah, Grr, ah, roo, gar, na uth is farewell, moor drun, fara rahur, 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 thee, ah, oh, thar, no, gru, rar. That was written the day after Marilyn Monroe died.
Oh, I'm going to read this down. I'm trying to keep track of time. Oh, there it is. There it is. All right. Ode to Jackson Pollock. Hands swinging the loops of paint. Splashes, drips, chic lavender, duende, black and blue, blue and red, Jackson Pollock. My sorrow is selfish. I won't meet you here. I see your crossings of paint. We are all lost in the cloud of our gestures. The smoke that we make with our arms. I cry to my beloved too. We are lost in lovelessness. Our sorrows before us. Copy them in air. We make their postures with our stance. They grow before us. The lean black she-wolves on altars of color. We search our remembrance for memories of heroic anguish. We put down our pain as a singing testimony gouges corruptions, wrinkles held loose in the net of our feelings and hues. We crash into their machinery, making it as we believe. I say we, I, you. You saw the brightness of pain. Ambition. We give in to the lie of beauty in the step of creating. Make lies to live in. I mean, you held yourself in animal suffering. You made your history of pain, making it real for beauty, for ambition and power. Invented totems from teacups and cigarettes. Put it all down in disbelief, waiting, forcing. Each gesture painting caught on to the method of making each motion, your speech, your love, your rack, and found yourself heroic, huge, burning with your feelings like making money makes the body move, calls you to action, swirling the paint and studying the feeling, caught up in the struggle and leading it for the beauty of animal action and freedom of full reward. To see it down in praise, and admiration, to lead, to feel yourself above all others. No matter what, it's there. No one can remove it. Done in full power. Liberty and Jackson Pollock, the creator. The mind is given credit. You strangled the lean wolf, beloved to yourself, guardians of the secret, and found yourself the secret, spread in clouds of color, burning yourself and falling like rain. Transmuted into grace and glory, free of innocence, containing all, pressing experience through yourself onto the canvas. Pollock, I know you are there. Pollock, do you hear me? Spoke to himself. Beloved, as I speak to myself, to Pollock, into the air and fall short of the body of the beloved, hovering always before him, her face, not a fact, memory, or experience. But there, in the air, destroying confidence, the enormous figure of her mystery, always there in trappings of reason, worked at his sureness, demanding her place beside him, called from the whorls of paint, asked for a face and shoulders to stand naked before him to make a star. 1961, he pulling the parts of her body together to make the perfect figure, assembled a lovely shape of chaos, seeing it bare and hideous, new to the old eye, stark, black and white, the perfect figure lying in it, peering from it. And he gave her what limbs and lovely face he could, from the squares, angles, loops, splashes, broken shapes, he saw of all with bare mind and body. What a piece of black spirit you are. You who come through the door with a sleek long tail and yellow eyes to sit on my knees as I hold you against your will. And I get giddy feeling your captive body as the harpsichord plays Bach.
Jim Morrison.
O muse, sing that I be me, be thou, be meat. Be me, be I, no ruse, a mammoth man, and stand with rainbow robes that drop away in globes that float in air about my hand. A universe in figure eight swirls about my head in flashing neon-lighted dots and blurs and spots and heavy lines of triumph energy that lie within my skin. I raise this knife, this wand, with blade so thin. I lie upon a circled polished table and leap up to be myself again. O potency, to be myself, soiled soul, spirit again, and nothing more. I'm going to take 3 minutes and be right back. Throat lozenges now. Thank you. Boy, I feel like I didn't even read that poem for Jane. Jesus. Here goes again. You know how Olson was? He'd say, "What does not change is the..." What does not change? No, no. What does not change is the... No, no, no. He'd have to get it exactly right. What does not change is the will to change. O muse, sing that I be me, be thou, be meat, be me, be I, no ruse, a mammoth man, and stand with rainbow robes that drop away and globes that float in air about my hand. A universe in figure eights swirls about my head in flashing neon-lighted dots and blurs and spots and heavy lines of triumph energy that lie within my skin. I raise this knife, this wand with blade so thin. I lie upon a circled polished table and leap up to be myself again. O potency, to be myself, soiled soul, spirit again, and nothing more. O muse, O me. I'm going to read a few poems from Swirls and Asphalt. And the motto to Swirl, I love the idea of a motto to a book of poems. Rossetti found the motto to Blake's Songs of Innocence and Experience in the library long after Blake's death. It had never been published before. And I went to, I haven't thought of this in a while. The good are attracted by their perceptions, think not for themselves, until experience teaches them to catch and to cage the fairies and elves. And then the knave begins to snarl, and the hypocrite to howl, and all his good friends show their private ends, and the eagle is known from the owl. I took my motto, though, from Dogen Zenji, just a one-line motto, from his book, The Shobogenzo, written in the 14th century AD in Japan. Dogen is the more or less the founder of modern Soto Zen. And the motto to Swirls and Asphalt, poems for Amy, is the limits of the knowable are unknowable. Sounds like Goethe. It really does sound like Goethe. The limits of the knowable are unknowable. I polished the stars off my boots. Their skin now
Faces of Rembrandt and Shakespeare on their top speak to one another, covered with the comedy of bruises and torn nails. The smell of lime from the squeezed rind mixes with stardust settling around the rusty refrigerator lying on the hill. We are here in the car roar, in this instant, between the changing climates and the love we claim with our infinite presences. I guess it won't cause any electric happenings. I spilled the water up here. Never trust a paw with a cup. How badly we need love to invent it. We pretend to be billowing clouds of flesh, giving morning kisses on the backs of our necks. We are floating, suspended in honey, like cupids in amber. Listen, the whales are singing very clearly in our hearts, and there's a blade of violet light on the window ledge. Since this is sort of set in a movie theater, it made me think of seeing Marilyn Brackage yesterday. Stan Brackage died on Victoria, as you may know, about 7 or 8 years ago. And Marilyn, his wife, still lives there. And there are no Stan Brackage festivals up here in British Columbia. I don't get it. You know, the great filmmaker. Amazing.
Well,
what?
I imagine that the specifics and the technical.
Yeah. In the painted chamber with the niches is a moment of the passion we embody and our tiredness and rest and calm. No, what does not change? In the painted chamber with the niches is a moment of the passion we embody and our tiredness and rest and calm. A cardboard bucket of popcorn and car crashes is with us in the darkness and the waterfall. The loud noise is all around in universal directions and we are warmly touching. You float down the long carpeted flight, a movie goddess in high-heeled sandals. We belong. This space is our nation. Elsewhere are stars and sunlight. The sunset moment is an orange nebula upon black blueness, shaking trees and the most distant blazars in their sizelessness. Consciousness and size are oatmeal and rubber bands compared to what we hug between us, loving ourselves with the momentary stuff. It causes me much grief that only the mere bright instant in the endless numbness shall always be eternal as your black parka or our hands holding hands. Soon there will be yellow pansies in the field of green grass among the new deaths of old friends. But now the days grow longer and bee queens awaken in the dark winter nests ready to imagine children in nectar. And then haiku. Hey, driver, Your big, soft, steel, rubber-smelling car owns you. Another idea. The fox turd is a cliff, and the butterfly is a condor. Work on it. Hey, it's all consciousness. Thumps of assault rifles and the stars. Hey, it's all consciousness. It's all consciousness. Thumps of assault rifles and the stars. We swim in the illumination of the full moon through the cold eucalyptus branches, and the cat really does purr somewhere besides in our heads, as real as the icy wind over the garbage bin and the smell of baked apples and hot cinnamon. We love the cold air that enters us and the warm beaches all wrapped in this moment. Monteverdi voices sing, hawk's breath on the table and plums nestled in velvet. It's carved on a jewel, with gear falcons diving from their nests on a splintering cliff to kill a lurking raven with one blow of the beak to her black cranium. I pick up the dead body from the frozen moraine and listen uncomprehendingly to my friend's voice shouting in the wind, "We will always together in this never, which is the now that we have in whatever realms we slip from." To sleepiness, to dreams that we remember of those who come to speak to us or mumble right before awakening. We have always wanted to do this, but who would know? It's like the truth continuing to be alive and flexing deltoid and we must, what does not change, no. We have always wanted to do this, and who would know? It is like the truth continuing to be alive and flexing deltoid muscles in the midst of the ongoing deception. Here we are in the beginningless and endless realm, just where the wheel is turning and touches the wall of stars and clear-seeing eyes. Everyone is with us, and you and I are faultless and so alone that we shudder like awakening cricket eggs in the warming loam. We are always this old and young. The morning air has an edge of brightness, and there's the smell frozen leaves that fits into last night's layered salmon and rose sunset like a black Scottish knife into a scabbard jeweled with crystals. It's okay as the fingers of your left hand. From the non-beginning of the wave, from the non-beginning of the wave to the endlessness is a golden lion, watching the black fly on his paw. He is nothing and is exactly this. His tail tip is almost still. He is this instant high school shootings and marriages and melting bridges. We may learn the tastes of things our imagination overwhelmed with roadside feedlots and rippling mounds of ripe peaches under the wheels of smoky trucks. Misty walls of pink roses grow over a house. And the rose-breasted grosbeak sings there in his moment and disappears. We are in other places, but there is nothing between us, not even aircraft carriers or roadside bombs waiting for armored trucks. You are wearing gray cashmere, a black coat, and your perfume. There's an engine roar in your ears. There's the dragging grate of earth-smashing machinery here, and the buzzing of the black fly. I'm going to read two more poems and a couple of haikus, and then see if anybody has any questions or answers for me. No reason to hold back the party. Everything is eaten alive and loves it. The received perception of awareness is as good as a back rub and the green eyes of a loving cat with white whiskers. This is a fire, but we do not sit and sing at its edge or speak of old hunting trips. There's no dance in the April rain on platinum cinders. Desperate and kind, we own it all in this cold, lovely drip of water. The melting together of our knowing is the jewel, a blend of emerald and ruby scattering light from meat. Tiles on the bathroom floor are highly glazed, chilling my bare soles, and everywhere are signs of you, your voice, your perfume, a blonde hair on the counter. I know we have inner lives because I am deeply moved by patterns of sunlight and shade on the withered skin of my legs, and remember a sack of spider eggs, dusty, covered with leaf fragments, on the side of a steep stone cliff above the boulders where we walk. Beside the creek is a deer skeleton. Old age in a Nazi nation is as good as youth in the wild, deep-stirring music and dancing, in the swirling patchouli of lights and pictures sliding over the body and walls and ceiling. The pulse thrums and the hormones throb in high-mindedness and sexuality. Sweat drips between the pectoral muscles and onto boots and bare feet. Love is made with a mystic throb of the brow. Myriadness of mind must grow into liberation of beings, and it may be a gift to live for a moment in hell worlds. Spiritual occasions are furnaces burning us without smoke. You are free of guilt and proud, and you honor this instant with the winsomeness of your face as you awaken. The Bader-Meinhof gang has gone into hiding with the corporations and the viziers. Nothing is more immortal than my kiss on your breast. Inside and outside are a fantasy. I'll close with a couple of haikus. Thank you. The heron flies quickly over your head as you speak on the phone. Well, you think that was tough. Try this one. Oh, accident. Oh, perfect crushed snail. Oh, accident. Oh, perfect crushed snail. Like a star gone out. Hummingbird shadow on the purple plum. No summer lightning, though.